Sote, Ironside Academy, Book 3. Written by Jane Washington. Narrated by Jennifer Sterling. Chapter 1. Soul Infraction. Isabel drifted in and out of consciousness for what seemed like an eternity, bobbing up and down like a rag doll tossed into a stream and pulled along with the current. Sometimes she was in free fall, tumbling down a waterfall with no end in sight. She thought she screamed when that happened, but it never amounted to anything. No impact when she landed, no sudden submersion. 1 minute she was falling, and the next she was asleep again. Sometimes she passed through warmer currents, where she drifted closer to the surface, sunlight striving to stroke her cheeks. That was when she knew she was herself, and someone was holding her. She was cocooned in a warm, resinous scent. Sweet, like a drop of honey on the tip of her tongue, but deep, earthy, and woody. Amber. It sank into her nose and mouth, filling her up until there was no room for the water she drifted through to spill into her lungs and drown her. After some time, the stream turned into a cloud, and she was no longer bobbing, but floating. She tried to edge away from the heat when it grew too much, but burning hands always dragged her back, tucking her against muscles that seemed tight and stiff with tension. His voice was the first tangible thing she registered after days of floating. It was as tight and tense as his body, biting out a harsh word to another voice. The other person in the room sounded calm and measured, their tone resonant. It was clearer than the rasped words from the warm body wrapped behind her. "You cannot lie to me," the calm stranger stated. It was impossible to tell their gender. Isabel flinched at the change in the amber scent wrapped around her, the drop of honey against her tongue souring into something acidic that burned her taste buds.
"And you still haven't told me how you managed to get in here every damn day,"
the warm person behind her growled.
"We walk from the chapel to the hospital,"
a third voice supplied. It was a droll voice, young and feminine, with a sharp, sardonic undertone. Another stranger. Isabel peeled her eyes open, the movement taking far more effort than it should have.
"She's awake," the androgynous voice stated. "You're overheating her, by the way."
"Fuck off."
It was Theodore holding her, his graveled tone ripping through her body. She was curled in his lap in a hospital bed, the back of the bed raised to allow him to sit up while he cradled her. He was also very warm.
"Illy?"
His voice softened instantly, his hand supporting her head as she tried to lift it up. His thumb brushed across her cheek.
"Welcome back."
His eyes narrowed on hers like he had more to say, but he only sucked in a breath, his pupils dilating as they flicked over her features before he turned back to the other voices.
"Now isn't a good time."
"Now is the perfect time," the younger voice replied. "That's why we came now."
"Hush, Sophia,"
the androgynous stranger scolded. Isabel dragged her attention to the speaker. A tall woman with skin like cinnamon baked happily in the sun, and elegant narrow eyes that stared unflinchingly back at her. The deep, gold-ringed mahogany hue of her stare unsettled Isabel, making her shrink back against Theodore. The woman was an alpha. Her gray hair was cut short, the strands flat and straight, and she was wearing plain, threadbare clothes, her gray shirt sporting mismatched buttons, though the cloth was perfectly pressed and probably better cared for than the numerous designer dresses Isabel had been stitched into during the settlement tour. She shuddered, her teeth mashing together as pain laced through her body and mind.
"Get the nurse,"
Theodore barked. The alpha with the gray hair stepped closer,
peering at Isabel. She towered over the bed, her dark brown eyes shrewd. There was a small pin in her collar, a silver lyre, her only adornment.
Both of her eyes have changed, the woman noted. She's been wearing a contact to cover the other eye.
Her tone was devoid of shock or curiosity. She was simply making a calm observation.
I suppose the bond specialist wouldn't have thought to check the authenticity of her normal-looking iris.
You're seeing things,
Theodore growled, cuddling Isabel closer, his hand cupping her face, blocking off her view of the woman, and hiding her eyes. She pulled his hand down with shaking fingers. The alpha woman had already seen her eyes, and watched as the other woman thrust out her arm, offering Isabel her palm.
Maya Rosales, she introduced herself. You can call me Maya, or Guardian Rosales, if you like. I keep the chapel.
Isabel's brow furrowed as she stared at the hand, some of her remembered pain slipping away as she was distracted by the very hot, vibrating body curled behind her. Theodore felt like he was seconds away from lunging forward and ripping the older alpha's entire arm off.
Keep the chapel?
Isabel's voice cracked, the words barely dragged into existence as she slipped her hand weakly into Maya's.
The Academy tries to keep a guardian on grounds for the students who still follow the gifted religion.
Maya immediately turned Isabel's hand, revealing the deep wounds spidering up her arm. They looked like scattered lightning bolts, raw and puckered, a deep, angry red. Stitches knitted her skin back together. Theodore finally snapped, gripping the other woman's wrist between his thumb and forefinger. He flung it away from Isabel before tucking her arm gently back in against her chest.
These are my children,
Maya continued, without so much as a flinch at Theodore's overreaction.
They came to work as my soul keepers.
The guardian stepped out of the way, revealing a girl around Isabel's age and a boy who couldn't have been older than 9.
Sophia and Luis.
I'm sorry.
Isabel glanced between them all.
I don't know much about the gifted religion.
Yeah, icon kid and all that.
Sophia cocked her head, watching as Theodore pulled out his phone, angling his screen away from Maya.
Soulkeepers are like chapel assistants. Glorified cleaners and librarians, really.
The girl was stunning. Her skin was golden, with a rich olive undertone. Her hair cut into a shining dark bob, her features regal and full of grace, just like her mother. Her lips were naturally full, flushed with a pink color that matched the second-hand shirt her brother was wearing. The boy was also beautiful, with a wary, shy gaze and oversized spectacles that hung down his nose. He pushed them up nervously as Isabel looked at him, but they immediately drooped down again, teetering on the tip of his nose. He had the same curious, narrow stare as his sister and mother.
I was the one who suggested the chain, Maya said.
What chain?
Isabel peeked at what Theodore was doing with his phone. He was texting Kaylin. Theodore.
Need help.
Theodore.
Isabel is awake.
Theodore.
Annoying guardian lady saw her eyes. That one.
Maya gestured to Isabel's arm, which was still tucked against her chest, held there protectively by Theodore's free hand. She wiggled it out of his grip, frowning at the delicate gold chain wrapped around her wrist. She had been too distracted and disorientated to notice it before. It was looped several times, the other end disappearing into the blanket, reappearing to lead up to Theodore's wrist, where it circled in a firm grip. She didn't recognize it instantly, but the longer she stared, the more peculiar it seemed, almost like it was glowing slightly from within. And then she realized what it was. It was the chain that had appeared when Sado kissed her.
By the time they found you, you had already been out there for something like 6 hours,
Maya explained, They thought you wouldn't survive. So I was called to bless your body when you passed.
Out where?
She asked, barely above a whisper.
The hiking trail,
Theodore supplied, dropping his phone. Kaylin took her back to the trail.
How much did they know?
Eve's involvement was fairly obvious by the fact that it had all happened inside her house, and several people had seen her greet Isabel at the door. But did they know why? And where was Eve now? She stared down at her wounds again, frowning even harder. She was full of stitches, which meant Kaylin hadn't taken her body back in time. Or maybe he had, but her wounds had been too serious. Maya spoke up again.
Your father arrived with your possessions, and I was there when the nurses searched your bag. I saw the chain and knew what it was immediately.
They've been visiting every day,
Theodore whispered against the shell of her ear.
Waiting for you to wake up. Sticking their noses into everything.
And now you have woken up.
Maya smiled. She looked like she was waiting for Isabel to thank her.
What is it, then?
Isabel held up the chain, deciding to act dumb. Her voice cracked again, and she winced, prompting Theodore to reach for a pitcher of water set beside the bed. He pushed a cup into her hand, and she thanked him with a strained smile, sipping the cool liquid.
It's a soul artifact.
It was Sophia, the daughter, who spoke, looking a little bored, or maybe she was just uncomfortable. She seemed to be standing protectively in front of her little brother and shooting Theodore the occasional wary look.
Like from the stories, back when bonding was more common.
At Isabel's baffled expression, the other girl rolled her eyes.
So, the gods choose to bind people together, right? Well, they used to bestow gifts on bonded couples to show their blessing. Glowing halos, crowns of flowers, matching wedding cloaks, lovebirds following them around, red strings and golden chains tying them together.
She waved her fingers toward the chain, her blue painted nails flicking dismissively. Either she didn't believe what she was saying, or she wasn't sure that Isabel was worthy of the God-given gift.
Well, Isabel swallowed. Okay, then. What made you think this was a soul artifact?
A chain of exquisite design long enough to wrap all the way around two people, lit within by a subtle glow?
Maya returned dryly, before pulling a folded piece of paper from her pocket. It was a photocopied image from a book.
Because of Athelina, she explained. In the older texts, she's called the Celestial Enchantress.
The woman in the picture was nothing short of radiant. Her appearance hinted at so many different lineages, it was impossible to tell which race she belonged to. It should have been confusing or overwhelming, but it made sense somehow. It was as if she had been assembled with the ideals of beauty from each individual race, turning her into a tapestry of humanity so complicated it somehow became simple. She was beauty. Her eyes were deep and expressive, a gradient of color that ran from rich brown to pale gold. Her hair was lustrous, floating around her like a cloud, inky black and auburn closer to her skull, and soft pastel shot through with bright white along the ends. Her skin had beautiful patches of ivory and oak, light and dark. Even her full and shapely lips seemed to shift from a soft rose to a warmer peach, to a deeper berry. Her face was a balance of symmetry that exuded a calm, harmonious nature in every line, slope, and curve. But the most shocking detail about her was the chain. Despite the extremes of her appearance, she only wore a thin linen dress. The chain, looping around and around her like a living, cognizant thing, appearing to glow softly from within.
Is that one of the gifted gods?
Isabel asked, handing the picture back. She didn't comment on the similarities of the chain, even though something hard and fearful lodged in the back of her throat. They were talking about
gods now? One of them, yes.
Maya folded the paper and tucked it back into her pocket.
Aphelina inspires both the mortals and the gods toward aesthetic expression. In layman's terms, you could say that she's the goddess of love and beauty. She is always the most liberal with her gifts, though I haven't heard of her bestowing any in some time. The door flew open, Kaelin striding into the room without a knock, Nico right behind him. They both stopped short when they saw Isabel setting up in Theodore's lap. Kaelin's gaze flicked down to her arms before settling on her face again, his huge chest swelling as he sucked in a breath. Nico didn't give anything away, but he only tore his eyes from her for a quick moment to do a rapid sweep of the room before settling his attention back on her. It was heavy, watchful, but his expression was blank, his beautiful eyes guarded. He situated himself out of the way, leaning back against the wall and crossing his arms. The lopsided smile he always gave the cameras was thinned into pressed lips, his muscles twitching even as he kept himself still, his broad shoulders hunched inward.
"Guardian Rosales,"
Kaelin greeted the woman tersely.
"I see you returned."
His tone suggested that she had been asked not to return.
"I have free rein of the hospital."
Maya faced off against the massive Alpha, her backbone apparently made of steel.
"The patients find us comforting."
"You've seen her eye."
Kaelin didn't bother engaging in the pleasantries Maya's tone suggested she was trying to draw him into.
"None of us find that comforting. Least of all Carter."
Kaelin's power rippled through the room, causing the boy, Luis, to whimper. Sophia tucked him beneath her arm, edging him behind their mother. Both of them were bowed over, their heads lowered in submission. Unlike their Alpha mother, they appeared to both have the rust-colored Delta rank ring around their irises.
"I'm surprised to learn that you're in on this as well, Professor."
Maya flicked her hand to the bed.
"I know how alphas can be, but surely some lines of propriety remain. And yet they don't."
Kaelin sighed, rubbing the side of his face.
"I have to protect my alphas. If you tell anyone about the Sigma's aberration, they're going to resume their search for her mate within Ironside, and we both know the very first place they'll turn to. I need my alphas to stay focused on narrowing down their specializations and building their fan bases. I'm already allowing several of them to surrogate for Carter, since it does so well for their ratings. But I have to draw the line somewhere. I need their heads in the game, and there's only so much time until summer break. Who knows how long they'll be gone if the officials bring them in for testing? Screen time is everything, Rosales."
"After the Colorado shooting and the Vermont attack, I'm surprised you're willing to speak so freely against the OGGB.
Maya took a small step back, like she didn't particularly want to be caught standing too close to Kaelin.
"They're on the hunt for anti-loyalists, especially here."
"Here? Because of Eve? The Vermont attack?" Isabel recoiled, acid spilling into the back of her throat. Theodore slipped his hand through the ties in the back of her hospital gown. His palm pressed against her bare skin, surprisingly cool despite the absurd heat of his body. The touch gave her something to focus on, and she concentrated on the way he gently drifted his fingertips over the subtle bumps in her spine until some of the panic had subsided. Nico still hadn't taken his eyes off her, and it seemed like he released a short breath when she blinked back into focus. Kaelin stared stoically at Maya, who eventually deflated slightly, withering under his stare, their brief battle of dominance presenting a clear winner.
"I won't tell anyone about her eye, your eye."
Maya flicked her attention to Isabel, frowning slightly at the way Isabel's skin had turned ashy, sweat gathering on her forehead. The guardian paused for a breath before continuing.
"But if you aren't going to allow the Academy to study her..."
She turned back to Kaelin.
"Then I would like to..."
"No."
Kaelin cut across her.
"Nobody touches her. looks at her, studies her.
The room grew quiet, Maya's attention turning immediately, assessing. Even Sophia peeked out at Kaelin, brows jumping up. Maya looked back to Theodore and Isabel, her eyes dancing between them, her lips pinching.
While it is possible for the soul artifact to feed off a surrogate to heal a soul infraction, this recovery has been quite miraculous.
Her attention narrowed on Theodore.
Have you been tested, Mr. Kane?
Tested how?
Theodore's voice was silky smooth, his grumbling vibrations under control as he turned his attention to soothing Isabel.
Have your eyes been tested?
Maya asked sharply. Kaelin stepped forward in a blur, but Isabel quickly sat up and then raised herself onto her knees, fighting off dizziness as Theodore's hand slipped away from her back and everyone in the room turned to look at her. She clutched Theodore's knee to keep herself steady as she held herself up. The situation was seconds away from spinning out of control.
Don't disrespect my surrogate,
Isabel demanded quietly. She fought to keep her tone even, despite the shake in her limbs.
If you keep it quiet that I've been hiding the fact that both my eyes changed, you can have the chain. You can study it or whatever you want to do with it. That's why you keep coming back, right? Because of the soul artifact?
And you.
It was Sophia who spoke, giving a small shrug.
She's very excited that Aphelina is blessing us again.
Agreed.
Maya eyed the chain.
I won't tell a soul, not even if they torture me.
She assented so fast that Isabel found her mouth popping open, the arguments she had been trying to muster falling away. Not even if they torture her? Who the hell made promises like that?
I advised your bond specialist to cut the chain away when you woke up.
Maya continued like she hadn't just shocked all of them.
They had to add links to close it properly. But if you would permit me to do it now?
Dread filled Isabel, and she curled a hand protectively around the chain circling her wrist. She looked to Kaelin, but he was locked into some sort of silent conversation with Nico. Nico nodded subtly, and Kaelin fell back a step, moving away from the guardian to put his back against the door. They were allowing this to go ahead. For a moment there, it almost seemed like Kaelin was about to advance on Maya. Maybe he could force her mind to go back in time, just like he had forced Isabel's body back in time. Kaelin met Isabel's eyes, dipping his chin in a short nod, and she turned back to Maya, swallowing hard.
Will it hurt?
She asked, staring down at her forearms. Hurt didn't even begin to describe how it had felt to have the light torn out of her. Just the thought of it had her fingers curling into fists, wanting to close around her strands of light and hoard them close to her chest. Where were they now? The thought sent another ping of panic racing through her body.
Yes, Maya stated plainly. But your bond specialist will do it either way. You can't go about your life tethered to someone else. You're out of the woods now, so there's no reason to keep the connection. Especially since they only did it to humor me in the first place. If you don't believe in soul artifacts, then you have nothing to worry about, You won't feel a thing. It's just a random chain that appeared completely out of thin air for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
Isabel sank back onto her heels. Theodore caught her hips and pulled her fully back into him again. She crossed her legs, cradling her bound wrist, as Maya brushed past a roll of bandages on the table beside the bed, picking up a small pair of pliers. They must have been left by whoever added the links to her chain. She held out her hand, but Theodore pulled Isabel's wrist back, holding out his own hand first. Maya snapped the chain deftly, and the pain was immediate. Sharp, hot, warm, and wet. It felt like a knife straight to her chest. She gasped, pressing her hands against the hospital gown, surprised that no blood flowed over her fingers. The pain speared all the way through her body, making tears spring to her eyes. Her toes curled, her body hunching inward, trying to curl into a ball. Maya paused, eyes on Isabel. She didn't look triumphant that she had been right about the chain being some sort of soul artifact, only sympathetic over Isabel's pain. Thin lines bunched between her elegant brows as she waited for Isabel to recover.
Just do it quickly,
Isabel chattered out through her teeth, lifting her shaking hand. Maya quickly cut the chain, but it seemed to come alive suddenly, glowing furiously and immediately wrapping around Isabel's wrist again, digging painfully into her skin. Isabel's breathing turned harsh. Theodore didn't seem to be breathing at all. Kaylin and Nico both surged forward a step, Nico's eyes widening in astonishment. Kaylin whipped out a hand, holding the other alpha back from coming any closer. Maya put the pliers to the chain again, but pressed down much slower, her grip experimental. The chains glowed and vibrated in warning, but the further Maya adjusted the pliers away from Isabel's hand, the less of a reaction she got. When she was far enough away, she quickly made a cut, and the end of the chain whipped up, striking Maya's hand and leaving behind a welt, blood already welling up to the surface of her skin before it recoiled to wrap contentedly around Isabel's wrist. The end of the chain settled down over the back of her hand, nestling against her skin. Sophia rushed forward, quickly wrapping her mother's hand in a bandage, while Maya just stared at her torn skin, brows pushed high, mouth slightly parted. She seemed to be breathing faster, but she held her composure well. "It's still alive," Maya eventually stated, turning slowly back to Isabel. Isabel rocked in Theodore's hold, her arms crossed over her chest as she tried to swallow down the pain. It seemed unbelievable that all this feeling had been held back by a chain. A chain that had seemed at least somewhat ordinary until Maya had cut it. Her fingers shook violently as she gathered up the rest of the metal, holding it out to the guardian. It felt cold and heavy, like all the magic had escaped from it, to burrow into the short length wrapping her wrist, leaving only plain, expired gold behind. Maya took it hesitantly, relaxing only when it did her no harm as she turned and poured it into the small bag that Sophia held open. "If there's anything you want to know about the soul artifacts, or if any more of them appear..." Maya backed toward the door, arching a brow in an expression resembling surprise as Kaylin easily stepped out of her way. "I live in the small residence behind the chapel. You can also find me in the chapel in the mornings." Isabel nodded. It was all she could manage. "I will inform the nurses that she is awake. You should have a few minutes," Maya added, aiming the statement at Kaylin before she ushered her children out ahead of her. Sophia popped back into the opening before Kaylin could shut the door, her mahogany eyes lighter than her mother's, her Delta rank ring making them appear a tarnished bronze.
"Or me," she said to Isabel. "You can come talk to me if you ever get sick of these Ironside posers. See ya."
She gave a weird, dorky salute before disappearing. Kaylin snapped the door shut, leaning against it again as his eyes settled back onto Isabel with a heavy weight. The lighter, translucent hue of his gaze dripped into molten gold, simmering with fierce intelligence. He had the eyes of a predator, always scanning for weaknesses in the flimsy disguises people wore, digging out chinks and dints until all their efforts to appear perfect were in vain, leaving behind only primal fear for what he might do with what he discovered about them. The only thing was, he didn't quite have that effect on her. Everything about him that had made him seem so intimidating now made her feel safe. He was a victim of this situation as much as she was, but he had protected her at every turn. He had saved her life. "You took me to the trail?" she asked, her voice muted by the pain that still thrummed through her. "Where is my light?" He dipped his head, nodding once.
Kian told me to put all the strings back inside you. I did what I could, and then I took you back to the fire trail. I couldn't heal you completely. Too many people had already seen your wounds. I just healed them enough that the light strings were hidden again. They were already searching the mountain when I got there, so I had to leave you pretty far out from the trail. I stayed with you as long as I could. The officials searched the trail and Eve's house for your threads, but then decided they must have disappeared when you teleported.
Thank you, she whispered. He didn't ask what had happened at Eve's house. None of them did. She glanced at Nico, who was still staring at the chain on her wrist, his expression now arranged into mild curiosity. The bond didn't... She struggled to put it into words.
Kian, Oscar, and Killian were all too far away from you when you were cut.
Kaelin answered.
You're still only half-bonded.
Theodore was keeping himself under control despite the utter turmoil that was trying to hammer into her body from his direction. He was drowning out the emotions of everyone else in the room, and there were too many competing thoughts and feelings for her to even attempt to decipher them with how scattered she already was. One of his hands stroked lightly up and down her spine, as the other wrapped around her legs, keeping her balled up against his chest. Kaelin eventually stepped away from the door, tilting his head like he could hear something on the other side.
You'll want your space to process all of this,
he said. A statement, not a question. She wouldn't have thought Kaelin knew her that well, but he seemed to understand that she preferred to process things on her own, in her own way.
But we should have a meeting with everyone as soon as possible. Can you manage?
He fished a set of contacts out of his pocket and handed them to her. She had a feeling he wasn't asking after her health. He was wondering if she was ready to face all of them, after finding out that they were all her mates. After kissing Sato, even if she had been under the influence of the glowing chains. After snuggling all over Kaelin in his bed, even though she had been under the influence of the beautiful light patterns beneath his skin. Especially after she wondered if the bond really was influencing her or if it simply lowered her inhibitions. And Eve and the strings. I'll come as soon as I'm released, she promised, extracting one of the contacts and tipping her head back to drop it into her eye.
They'll likely release you tonight.
Kaelin held out his hand for the contact case and she dropped it into his palm. He returned it to his pocket and jerked his chin at Nico.
So we'll do dinner, and then nobody will make you sleep in their room. I promise.
An empty laugh bubbled up in her throat, and she easily swallowed it down, nodding as they left the room. Only 30 seconds later, the nurses came in, holding charts and headed by Teek.
Isabel!
Teek sounded relieved and overwhelmed, her smile shaky, as she stood beside the bed, her hands fidgeting like she didn't know what to do with them before she settled a palm on Isabel's shoulder. Theodore shifted so that none of Teek's fingers touched his chest, his nose brushing once against the side of Isabel's neck, sampling what was probably a harried, pained scent.
Hey, Isabel greeted weakly. Thanks for giving me all these surrogates.
Teek smirked.
Don't think I could take them away if I tried. You have a very special bond with your friends.
Isabel stiffened, watching as the other woman retreated, quickly consulting with the nurses.
She didn't mean it like that,
Theodore whispered, his breath misting over her ear. She shivered, turning slightly to face him, but almost as soon as their eyes connected, he nudged her back to face the front. Something had been off in his expression, but he hadn't given her enough time to examine it. The nurses didn't seem to want or need Theodore to move as they examined Isabel, though they were careful not to touch him in any way. The more they skirted around him, the more confused Isabel grew, and eventually, Teek seemed to notice. She gave Isabel an understanding smile.
It's important to treat surrogates like real mates, especially in times like these.
Oh, Isabel didn't understand at all.
People hate to have their mate
touched in front of them, Teek specified. Or not in front of them. At all, basically.
Oh,
she repeated. Theodore scoffed out a soft laugh behind her.
You have upwards of 5 surrogates and understand exactly 0 rules.
There are rules? She asked as the nurses took her blood pressure. Is 5 too many? It seems too many.
Just try reducing it.
Theodore's voice turned gritty.
We aren't just going to let you get sick and die. But, yes, 5 is approximately 4 more than usual.
There aren't strict rules, exactly. This came from Teek, who had pulled a seat to the side of the bed, waiting for the nurses to finish their examination. It's more that surrogates should mirror a proper mate as much as possible, with 2 notable exceptions. Sex and...
Marking,
Theodore supplied. Teek looked impressed.
The others did some research,
he muttered. Hmm. Teek crossed one tanned leg over the other, her skirt catching at her knee as she relaxed back into the chair. The others are correct. While only a permanent marking can complete a bond, sex will bring a half-bonded pair much closer together. If a surrogate permanently marks a bonded or half-bonded person, or has sex with them, it's considered an egregious disrespect to the bond, and could result in a minor tear. Tear? Isabel echoed, peering down at the arms the nurses were now lightly bandaging. A soul infraction, Teek specified. They happen in varying degrees of severity. Some soul infractions can kill a person. It's very important to avoid them. If a soul infraction kills an anchor, the tether will also die. Being intimate with someone outside of your bond isn't likely to cause you much damage, but if you have a strong emotional connection with that person, the bond may see it as a defilement. Accidental markings might have no effect at all, but deliberate markings can have very serious consequences. In your case, since you haven't even met your mate and you're only half-bonded, it's highly unlikely that sex will cause any sort of soul infraction. But permanent markings and... She motioned to Isabel's arms. Direct assaults on the bond magic are a different story, no matter how close to your mate you are. When Isabel looked back up, Teek's eyes had filled with tears. But the bond specialist managed to blink them away so fast that Isabel started to doubt she had seen anything at all. I'm sorry for what happened to you, Teek whispered, her voice cracking before she cleared her throat delicately. Her next words were smooth and even. Most people don't survive such a serious soul infraction. Some believe it's a rupture of the soul itself, and if the body doesn't shut down from the abuse, the mind will. But you seem... She shook her head, a small smile trembling on her lips. You must have an incredibly strong mate to sustain you through such an event, and to continue to sustain you even without being by your side as you heal. I bet they're an alpha. Yeah, Isabel agreed hollowly. Maybe. Or there were 10 of them. I should caution you, though. Teek straightened in her chair, flicking her eyes to Theodore briefly, though the alpha behind Isabel was keeping quiet. He seemed to be monitoring what the nurses did to her very closely. With your bond still unformed, your mind and soul will take longer to heal than your body. There will be side effects. I love side effects, Isabel said dryly, but the joke didn't really land. Not when her voice was so raspy and her mouth was still pinched in pain. Theodore was the only one who reacted, his soft exhalation against the back of her neck sounding like the beginning of a laugh. Would you like to discuss everything later? Teek asked, surveying Isabel with concern. Am I getting out of here tonight? If you're cleared, Teek hedged. Isabel sighed, sinking back against Theodore, most of the strength sapping out of her. Might as well get it over with then. I'm sorry. Teek patted her hand. You probably just want to sleep.
I've been asleep for... days?
Over a week,
Theodore corrected her.
Over a week, she repeated numbly. So, actually, I am tired. Why am I so tired?
One of the side effects, Teek explained.
You're going to sleep a lot, and you'll be weak. Your appetite will disappear, but you need to force yourself to eat. A man suffering from a soul infraction once died of thirst without even realizing he hadn't been eating or drinking. So, sip water regularly and eat at your usual mealtimes, even if it's only a little. Do light exercise regularly.
Can I dance? She interrupted, her heart jumping into her throat and pounding there viciously.
Teek swallowed, looking down at her lap for a moment. No strenuous exercise, I'm sorry. Walking and stretching only for now. Your body might appear fine, but you need to very carefully monitor yourself for a little while to make sure your symptoms are getting better instead of worse. Of course, if we knew who your mate was, you could simply complete the bond and you would heal much faster.
What if I don't want to complete a bond?
The nurses all stiffened, glancing at each other. One of them diverted his attention to Teek.
She's clear to go tonight. Should we inform her father?
Teek waved her hand.
I've been in touch with him. I'll inform him.
The nurses quickly scrambled out of the room, and Isabel sighed, sitting up straight and crossing her legs, examining the bandages on her arms.
She was so dizzy, so tired already.
What did my father say?
She fiddled with the bandages, not having the heart to look up at Teek as she asked the question. She wasn't surprised to wake up and find her father missing.
He asked if you were fit to return to a full filming schedule,
Teek replied firmly, a hint of emotion catching in her voice, which she cleared her throat to cover.
He was called away for work, but he wants you up and running as soon as possible. He's asked for me to arrange extensive physiotherapy and counseling to minimize the damage.
Isabel scoffed, glancing back up.
And my other question?
Teek stiffened, shifting in her chair.
What if you don't want to complete a bond?
Isabel nodded, waiting.
Well, Teek blew out a heavy breath. I'm not sure you'll have a choice. That's the storyline Ironside is chasing. They're very impatient to find your mate, though the Alphas are, admittedly, providing plenty of entertainment in the interim.
We're very entertaining,
Theodore agreed, but his usual charming tone was dulled, his voice carrying a subtle strain of some kind.
But you aren't her mate,
Teek said, digging into the inside pocket of her jacket. Isabel watched the other woman's hand, throwing her walls down with a wince and reaching out carefully to test Teek's emotion. Suspicion. She sipped at it, drawing it in as slowly as she could. It was painful. The effort to use her ability and the concentration required for her to wield it with so much control was almost too much. She could feel her energy slipping away with every second, but she refused to go any faster. If Teek felt her intrusion, she would do far more harm than good. Teek pulled out a little torch, and Isabel pretended not to notice it. Even Theodore seemed to be pretending not to notice it. She could feel most of his muscles against her back, shoulders, and arms, and he kept his entire body deliberately relaxed, curved around her in a calm, loose way. Apparently, both of them had been thinking of the possibility that Teek might try to test Theodore's eyes at some point. They were both prepared, but a few minutes of preparation didn't really amount to much.
If Isabel was my mate, she would be wearing my mark all over her body,
Theodore drawled, tightening his arms around her. She kept siphoning off Teek's suspicion, one tiny drop at a time, hoping the other woman wouldn't notice. But it was hard to concentrate because Theodore was once again proving himself a phenomenal actor. He had inserted just enough gravelly possession into his voice,
twisting it with the right amount of torment and longing. And then he gave a small, self-aware laugh, making Teek blink at him. He was probably giving her a beautiful, perfect, heartbreaking smile. She was probably questioning everything she thought she knew about the world and falling under his spell, just like everyone else did. Her grip on the torch loosened, and she smiled back at him, mirroring whatever heartbreaking expression he wore, her eyes flitting over his face. "She'll never forget what you're doing for her," she tried to console him gently. "What all of you are doing for her. Right, Isabel?" Theodore brushed his cheek against Isabel's, folding his legs and wrapping strong arms around her middle until she was lifted fully onto his lap.
"But especially me, right, Isabel?"
He nuzzled near her ear.
"I'm your favorite, aren't I?"
He was probably trying to remind Teek that there were four other alphas all acting as surrogates, so Theodore couldn't possibly be her mate. Apparently, a true mate couldn't stand other people touching the person that belonged to them. But whatever his game was, it was short-circuiting her brain. She melted in his arms, the tremble easing from her limbs.
"You're very good at that,"
Teek noticed, watching Isabel turn into a puddle.
"But not good enough to be the real deal,"
he returned, with a forced, casual tone, trying, and failing, to mask the hint of agony that rode his voice.
"Jeez, talk about laying it on thick."
And Teek was eating it right up. She surreptitiously slid the torch away, her other hand twitching like she wanted to reach out to him. The woman was one big bleeding heart. Isabel very carefully, very slowly, slid her wall back up, cutting herself off from Teek before she could pass out. Isabel interrupted before they could devolve into sobbing and wiping each other's tears. "Is there anything else, or would it be okay if I go now? I want to walk out of here while I can still walk."
Chapter 2. Sigma Sponge. Isabel wiped her sweaty hands on her shorts, staring at the door to Dorm A. Killian had left clothes and toiletries in her hospital room. She knew it was him because they carried his earthy bergamot and bark scent. After showering, washing her hair, and dressing in small cotton shorts and a long-sleeved sweatshirt, she felt much more like herself, even if the sweatshirt was Killian's. There was a light sheen of perspiration dotting her skin from the slow, easy walk to Dorm A, even though Theodore had ambled along beside her slower than she had ever seen him walk before. Whenever she tried to speed up, he had touched her elbow to slow her down again, completely ignoring the students who stopped in their tracks at the sight of them, phones whipping up to snap pictures. She didn't catch any of their whispered words, but the Vermont attack, as Teek had put it, was probably big news. Bonded people were important to the gifted, and Isabel had never even heard of a bond infraction or soul infraction before, let alone known of it happening in the time she had been alive. Granted, her only source of gossip had been the human news, and they didn't particularly bother with what happened in the settlements, only what happened at Ironside. Theodore looked down at her, not pushing her to enter the dorm.
"Doing okay, Illy?"
She turned her head up to him, her lips curving, her smile tremulous. "Nope." His expression was drawn, his alpha ring shrinking to a thin gold line. He was holding back so much emotion, and he was so good at it. But now that they were alone and there were no cameras watching, she could see the cracks. She could feel them, too. His energy was sneaking out like a whip to crack lightly against her skin. It was sharp, electric, and restless. She rarely felt Theodore's power like a physical force, likely because he had spent his entire life trying to escape it.
"Say the word, and I'll take you back to your dorm instead,"
he offered. "I want to be alone for a while, but I don't know if I can."
"Say the word, and I'll crash on the floor with you."
"It's a bed," she defended.
It's a floor. With blankets.
She scowled at him, and his attention snapped to her lips. The storm in his eyes darkening, roiling, as he watched her nose scrunch and her lip curl. Despite the intensity in his eyes, his smile threatened to appear.
Isabel.
He rumbled out her name, the hint of his smile dropping away. He scrubbed both hands over his face, wiping away all traces of joy.
I'm so fucking sorry.
I know, she said, kicking the toe of her sneaker against the rocky ground.
For hiding it from you,
he pressed.
I know. It's not enough.
He sounded frustrated.
You should slap me. Call me names. Never speak to me again. For a day,
he quickly tacked on. She snorted. 2 days.
Day and a half.
A week, she said. Final offer.
You're negotiating in the wrong direction.
He backed her into the door before she realized what was happening, his hands on her hips. His body was trembling suddenly, his eyes full of turmoil.
Don't speak to me for 30 seconds.
His voice had lowered to something resembling a warning, something that begged her to back away, but he had her cornered. And he was warm. And he was Theodore. She lifted her chin, accepting the challenge, and his eyes flitted to her lips again. A short groan tore its way out of his throat.
I should be giving you physical intimacy to help ease the bond, he said.
He hadn't stopped touching her since she woke up. She furrowed her brow, showing her confusion. 23 seconds and counting. The grip around her hips pinched tighter, his expression suddenly torn.
We can't push it too far, in either direction.
He sounded so agonized, the words guttural. One of his hands released her hip to lift her chin, tilting her face up. She could feel his breath against her lips, choppy and harsh.
I'm going to help you get through your first night alone, okay?
She had already forgotten that she was supposed to not be talking to him, but she didn't have any words anyway. Her mouth was dry, her throat tight, her hands shaking. Her whole body was tingling in fear and anticipation. Fear because Theodore was untouchable. He was the most approachable, the most personable, the one with all the friends, the one people gravitated towards and championed. But Isabel knew it was all an act, and that made him the opposite of all the things he pretended. It was like she didn't really know him at all. He waited for something, his thumb brushing along her lower lip from one corner of her mouth to the other, dragging the flesh slightly as he increased the pressure. Every slow, measuring caress sparked something to life low in the pit of her stomach, eventually making her squirm. He hovered closer when she did, every plane of his body pushing up against hers. She could feel how hard he was just from touching her mouth, and everything suddenly seemed connected, their bodies triggering a cycle of responses in each other. His thumb pressed between her lips, catching on her bottom teeth, tugging her mouth open only slightly. Her stomach clenched hard. His erection pulsed, and he lowered his mouth over hers, not releasing her or making any move to kiss her. Some of his sharp, crackling power eased from her skin, but the goosebumps along her arms remained.
Do you want help? Or do you want to do it on your own?
He whispered.
Should I tide you over? Fill you up enough that you can last the night?
She made a small, begging sound. It was all she could do with his thumb in her mouth. It seemed like a strings-free offer, like he really was a surrogate instead of her actual mate. And that allowed her to be in the moment, to not think too hard about what he was offering. It didn't really mean anything. He slipped his thumb out of her mouth, replacing it with his lips, and she melted, just like she did every time he touched her. He controlled the kiss right from the start, using his grip on her chin to angle her face, tasting her slowly and sweetly, until she felt like she was drowning, and only his strong body anchoring her against the door was keeping her upright. She grew restless, but he kept the same maddening pace, scrambling her brain. She tried to move, to push against him, to tug his shirt and quicken the kiss, but he only nipped at her lips for the effort. She half expected his skin to start glowing, or another chain to magically appear. But something didn't feel right inside her. Something deep within her was hurting. And while Theodore's touch was tunneling her into a nerve-wracking cloud of lust, there was something deep down that was still broken. She was on her own with this. No magic to siphon away her inhibitions and make her brave. So when his hand brushed over her stomach, pushing her back just far enough to draw the oversized shirt up, bundling it above the hem of her shorts, she suddenly found that she couldn't breathe. He paused, his breath rough against her lips, and she realized he was debating whether to stop. "More," she whispered. He was holding back too much. She was burning up from the inside, and he was far too controlled. She hated it. He issued a throaty growl, inching his face back as he considered her.
"You sure?"
"More." She tugged on his wrist to try and bring him closer, or to pull his arm around her, but instead, his fingers pushed into her shorts. She hadn't been prepared for that. She just wanted him to feel as out of control as she did. But as soon as his fingertips slid into her panties and brushed her clit, she realized it was exactly where she needed him. Anyone else might have tried to ease her into having their hands down her pants, but not Theodore. He liked to shock her. He applied a little bit of pressure, watching the color flood into her face as she clutched nervously at his arms.
"Stop pushing my arms, Illy. I can't risk feeling how wet you are."
He groaned the words, nipping at her chin before kissing her. His lips pressed harder this time, his tongue demanding more from her as his fingers gently circled the bundle of nerves, increasing the pressure until she was squirming. It was like he already knew her body inside and out, like she was an instrument and he had been practicing her studiously for years and had already been awarded some kind of diploma. What she wouldn't pay to see him not automatically succeed at something. He watched her every reaction, changing the pressure and position and cadence of his touch with every shift in her expression or hitch in her breathing. He took her right to the edge, and then suddenly stopped, cupping her sex gently and leaving her there to float and pant into his lips.
"Okay,"
he rumbled, even though she was soaking the pads of his fingers and clutching his shirt so tightly she was almost tearing it off his wide chest. It gave her a moment to level out the emotions raging through her, the furnace burning beneath her skin. She swallowed, tears burning behind her eyes, her nerves frayed. Everything was frayed. Her heart felt like it was in a tattered mess, unraveling all over the place, and Theodore was letting her use him to overwhelm her senses, to ignore the clutter and fill her mind and body with a heat so scorching it barely mattered if she was unraveling or whole. But he wouldn't let her escape entirely. He was bringing her back just far enough that she was still there, still with him. He nuzzled her cheek, inhaling her scent, and she nodded.
"Good. Fuck. My perfect girl,"
he praised, low and rumbling, his wet fingers drifting back up to where she needed them, massaging her swollen bud until she was lost again, teetering on that same edge.
"You've never looked so beautiful, Illy."
The drop on the other side wasn't so scary this time, which was a good thing because he didn't give her a chance to catch her breath again. As soon as she reached the precipice, he pushed her right off the edge without a warning, sending her into a dizzying, delicious wave of stuttered heartbeats, unsteady fluttering, and the pain pleasure of her whole body clenching. She wanted to scream, or cry, or pull him as close to her body as she could get him, but she didn't have the strength. His whole body was vibrating when she blinked the black spots from her eyes, her throat hoarse even though she was sure that she hadn't uttered a single word. He pulled his hand out of her shorts and gently adjusted them again on her hips, letting her oversized sweatshirt fall again. She was limp against the door, a gentle hum taking up residence beneath her skin.
"How do you feel now?"
he rasped, his hand disappearing beneath the waistband of his pants. He adjusted himself, his jaw clenching, his eyes flashing. When he dragged his fingers out, they were no longer glistening with her dampness. For some reason, her body clenched again, really liking the fact that he had smeared her essence over his cock. It made a sharp, possessive feeling spear through her chest. It was just right. She was almost panicked at the thought that he could have walked away without doing that. "I feel," she swallowed, trying to stand straight again and trying to shove away her strange and intrusive thoughts. "Steadier and unsteadier," she laughed softly. "More grounded and more freaked out."
"Don't be embarrassed."
The words seemed to slip out in accidental alpha voice, and he winced, quickly amending.
"Shit, I mean, please don't be embarrassed. You suffered a soul infraction. You need a little extra soothing. It's natural."
She nodded, chewing on her lip. It felt puffy and tender. "And you're okay with..."
"Seriously, don't even."
He grinned at her, his smile stretching wide and disarming, his perfect teeth flashing brilliantly.
"I offered to be a surrogate. I knew you would need me to touch you."
"I didn't know." He scoffed.
"Give me the signal and I'll make sure you only have to suffer through one of us."
He narrowed his eyes on her.
"I'm talking about me, by the way.